From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. Big day next week for Georgia's animation industry and Archer fans.
I trust you know who I am?
The biggest mobster in L.A.
Archer, come to think of it, where were you last night?
Ask your wife. Hey, pal, you got a second?
Skaroo.
Mr. Archer, I would like to hire you to murder me.
Damn!
The show Archer returns for its eighth season. The animated series is made right here in Atlanta, not too far from the GPB studios, and we've talked to a number of people from the show over the past few years. Today, you'll hear from the actors who portray Lana, Archer, and Dr. Krieger, and we'll take you on a tour of the animation studio where the show is made. Archer is a favorite for our staff, but what show do you look forward to? Is there a show that you never miss? Let us know what it is. Call 404-500-9457, or you can post on our Facebook page. We might feature your comment on the show. H. John Benjamin's voice might be familiar to you. He's known for his work on the kids' show Word Girl, and he also portrays the title character for Archer and for Bob's Burgers.
I need to access my operations account, and you're preventing that. Now we can do this easy, or we can do it hard. Your call. No? Hard it is, then. Oh, God. I forgot. Did I get you? Me? Nothing. You, on the other hand, have a bullet inside you.
I talked with H. John Benjamin last year, just ahead of the season 7 premiere. I started by asking him something I've wondered about for a while. Why does he sometimes go by John Benjamin and sometimes adds the middle initial?
Yeah, there's, the H stands for something.
Henry, right?
No, not Henry. I never reveal it. It's my secret power. Having a name is my secret power. Having a secret name is my secret power. I started, it was a sort of a joke. I did a animated show in the 90s called Dr. Katz on Comedy Central, and my coworker, who I was dating at the time, Laura Silverman, who played a character on the show, she filled out my credit form, and she thought it would be pretentious to do that. So she got me.
And you kept it.
I did. I kept it. I just never switched back. But, in daily life, I'm just Mr. Benjamin.
So, now, Dr. Katz was your first role doing voiceover work, was it not?
It was, yeah.
And you had no interest in voice acting before that?
Not at all. I was doing comedy at the time, so voice work was not something to be had in Boston where I was. It wasn't really an option. It was totally out of the blue.
So what was that like when you suddenly started getting so many voicing gigs?
Well, the production company that made Dr. Katz ended up doing very well, and very much like Floyd County, where they do Archer, it was a kind of a small group of people making animation. Because of the success of Dr. Katz, we just kept doing more shows there. So I was really just getting work from one place, and it stayed in Boston for about 10 years. And they did about 5 or 6 shows. So, that was it. The end of that story.
Except that your voice is used for all kinds of different things. I mean, most people know you from Archer and as the title character in Bob's Burgers, but you were the voice of a head of cabbage on American Dad, and you were the tree in a movie called Hell and Back. Haven't seen,
Agreed.
But I saw that in your credits. And then you were the voice of the can of vegetables in Wet Hot American Summer, which is the series
yes.
on Netflix.
Right.
And I wonder, to what extent did your... I mean, you had a long history, and I assume still do, in sketch comedy. Do you still do that?
Not in a long time. I still do some stand-up comedy, but that's getting rarer and rarer as I go to bed earlier and earlier.
And you've talked about how hardworking some of the people were, like David Cross and Louis C.K. especially. And I wondered... Are you separating yourself? You don't think of yourself as driven like that?
Well, I sort of came to comedy through a friend of mine, and so it was never a passion for me. Whereas those people you mentioned and most of the people I knew who were doing comedy at the time were doing it for a reason, you know, like because they loved it and they wanted it to be their vocation, and you know, I was just kind of this this sort of tag along. But it just kept going. So it took me, I was a slow starter, but because I came to it less ambitious about what I was doing, I think that's sort of lack of ambition has stayed with me. I'm trying to catch up to those guys.
So then how much did you then appreciate playing a real person? You were in Master of None on Netflix, and I assume that's the point at which a lot of people suddenly connected the face with the voice.
A little bit. I've done a lot of TV here and there, small parts mostly. I did a show on Comedy Central for a year that I hosted and wrote called John Benjamin Has a Van, although I imagine not a lot of people saw it. So Master of None for sure, most recently, has been something I get recognized for, but it's never been, I've always been doing stuff like that for the last 20 years, but it's just been here and there. The animated shows for some reason have been constant, and it's great.
Do you find people suddenly recognizing your face?
Yes, Archer actually was the first show, animated show, that I've found myself getting recognized publicly quite a bit. I think just based on the nature of the fans, how overbearing they were.
I would say enthusiastic.
How obnoxious they are, how drunk they are. Archer just was a show that got, became kind of a cult hit very quickly. And I think because of that, people look up everybody who's in the show now. And, you know, when I started animation, there was like very little internet. So I don't think the same diligent research was done by kids, you know, looking up your favorite animated voice actor. But now I think it's commonplace. So Archer definitely changed. I was, and still am recognized quite a bit for that.
How old do you think your kid will have to be before you let him watch Archer?
He's watched Archer. So sorry. Yeah, he got me.
What do you mean he got you?
Well, I didn't really quite let him, but I'm very lazy about checking what he's watching in his room. He has a door. I can't seem to get myself to open it. I don't want to know what he's watching. He started watching Bob's Burgers probably a couple years ago, and he's a big fan of the show. But then suddenly, behind his door, I heard my voice as Archer one day. And I knew he was a man.
Does he ever give you feedback, like, on your performance?
Like, you could have done better?
Yeah. Well, because I know my kid, and he would tell me.
Yeah. You said that wrong, Dad. You're a terrible actor. He's not particularly critical. He of course loves Archer, and it's for him certainly a guilty pleasure for watching it. He's 13. I just hope a lot of the references go over his head.
Well, a lot of the references go over my head. So, but I don't know. 13-year-olds are kind of sophisticated at this point.
Yeah, I'm sure he's looking everything up, and we've blocked his Google.
So if I Google your name, I don't know if you've done this ever, but if I Google your name, the first related search that comes up is H. John Benjamin Net Worth.
I've seen that. Somebody sent that to me. It's quite a bit of money.
Well, I have to assume people are wondering how much you can make from voice acting.
That I feel like is a. I'm not sure where that number came from. It's pretty random. Maybe I put it in.
The number that you're listed as being worth?
Yes. You don't make a ton of money from voiceover. I've been fortunate to be in shows that have lasted a long time, and now being on two shows at once, you can kind of carve a good salary together. But back when I started doing that, it was, you know, it was kind of barely paying rent for a couple of years with doing small animated shows on cable networks. It's getting a little better, and you know, the success of the two shows I'm in has been good. But let me clarify, it's a ton relative to the work I do, so I just want to be fair.
Fair enough. Though I doubt very many people who are just getting into voice acting are gonna also reach that kind of success. They'll probably be more on the suffering end.
Oh, they'll fail. Yeah, no, I know they'll fail.
If you're just joining us, my guest is H. John Benjamin, actor, voiceover talent, most notably the voice of Archer on FX, which returns to TV tonight for its seventh season. Also, I wonder how different the process is for you for, say, Archer, where you're basically reading by yourself. None of the other cast members are with you. I assume it's just a producer reading lines for you. And Bob's Burgers, where you're all together. Does that make it a really different process?
Relatively different. Not extraordinarily different, but Archer is more streamlined. I'm still performing the scenes in the same way. I read usually with the producers and the director of Archer. So we go through the scenes and a few times. With Bob's Burgers, it does more promote an ability to improvise a little more. And so it's more unruly when you're working with a group of actors, some of whom, all of whom are improvisers.
Although you said it threw Kevin Klein off.
I think when he first did the show, he was surprised at how disorganized it was. He really had a actor's, you know, he has a classic actor's background. So every line was important to him. And it's not that way for the rest of the cast. It is, but because we work together for so long, it took him by surprise, like that we don't practice our lines over and over and rehearse. That was the one thing I think he was shocked about, no rehearsals.
Well, one thing that I learned during our tour was that every time a show is done and is going to air, they have a huge watching party down here with pizza. So the next time you're in Atlanta, you could watch it with everyone.
Go to the gun range.
Yeah, and exactly, and pick up that AR-15 again.
Yes, and I'll take you up on that.
H. John Benjamin is the voice of Bob in Bob's Burgers, many voices on the PBS Kids series Word Girl, and the voice of Sterling Archer on Archer. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, the voice of Dr. Krieger started his performing career as a puppeteer. But first, Aisha Tyler talks about Criminal Minds, CSI, and being a bona fide geek. This is On Second Thought. It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Today we celebrate the hit animated show Archer. And for those of you who don't know, the main character, Sterling Archer, has an obsession with a certain woman.
Lana. Lana.
Lana!
What?
Lana. Lana.
Lana!
What?
Lana. Lana.
Lana!
What?
Lana Kane is the lead female character in that show. She and Archer have a love-hate relationship, and more often than not, Lana is saving Archer's butt. Lana is voiced by actress Aisha Tyler, and she joins me now from NPR West in Culver City. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Good. Thanks for having me.
So the Lana Kane, the character herself, used to be, it looks like, from the storyline of the show. She started out as an activist and got recruited to be a spy straight from the protest line.
Yeah, I think Mallory Archer saw some kind of a kindred soul that day. For people who haven't seen the episode or who don't know the show, you know, Mallory Archer is Sterling's mother. She runs a spy agency. All spy agencies are clandestine. This is clandestine even from other clandestines. And she meets Lana when she's kind of a, you know, this hyper-intellectual college activist. And she's also an anti-fur protester. And she goes to throw blood on Mallory's fur coat.
Fur coat, yeah.
I might have been red paint. And they have this kind of standoff where, you know, Mallory, who's, you know, killed men for less, threatens Lana, and Lana doesn't blink. And in that moment, they fall in a very specific and moderately platonic kind of love, and Mallory recruits her to become a spy.
Yeah, although she sees
She sees a deadness in Lana's eyes that she connects with.
The lack of spark. And yes. I don't know if Lana knew how to fight before she joined, or she was just a really good study, but she is the one that actually is often the most lethal. Take a listen.
Our agents are highly trained in many disciplines. Like Krav Maga.
My arm! You're breaking my arm!
I'm sorry. Did that hurt?
Do you think of Lana as a feminist character?
Oh, 100%. And I think of her as a feminist in the most modern sense of the word, in the sense with the most clarity. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of dogma in any kind of like movement, but I think, you know, Lana is a progressive in some ways. She's, you know, maybe, I mean, in the beginning, I think we talked about her, Adam Reed and I, the creator of the show, as a kind of a closet Republican. So, you know, she has these kind of progressive ideals, but she also is potentially an economic conservative and a social liberal. So she's complex. And I think that is the embodiment of the modern feminist, which is that women are not a monolith. But I think at her best, at kind of her core, she's just a self-determining woman, and she wants what she wants, and she pursues it with vigor and aggression. I mean, everything from being, you know, essentially the only senior spy at this agency other than Mallory, having her eye on the chairwomanship of this organization, being in the field with all the other men, being a better spy than all the other men, and also eventually becoming a single mother on her own, you know, by choice. She's just, you know, she embodies the idea, the feminist idea, that everyone should be the architect of their own destiny, and also kick a lot of butt.
She does kick a lot of butt. And she also has almost a perfect foil to sort of express her own individuality and strength in Sterling, who is not quite as progressive. Here's another clip.
Baby crazy?
That's why I dumped her.
I dumped you because you're dragging around a 35-year-old umbilical cord!
See?
So how much of the dialogue is printed? How much do you get to play around with it?
These scripts come to us in perfect, immaculate condition. I mean, there's never a need to embellish because the writing is so brilliant. Sometimes Adam gives us opportunities to improvise, you know, hey, ad lib something here. But the show, as you see it, it springs wholly formed from the brilliant mind of Adam Reed. And I think none of us ever come in thinking we know better than him.
Yeah, although you're reading your lines not to each other, not to fellow actors.
No.
Yeah. Are you alone in your booth?
Yes. So we're not even all in the same city.
Right.
Chris and Judy and I are on the West Coast, and John and Jessica are in New York. And then Amber and Lucky, who play Pam and Krieger, are in Atlanta. So
Archer is like a footnote on your career right now. I mean, you've got the Criminal Minds thing. You've got you were obviously, a lot of people were first introduced to you through your role on Friends. When I mentioned that in the newsroom, they said, oh, yeah, the smart one. And then
that's nice.
Talk Soup. You have your own talk show. You do a podcast. I mean, you've written a couple books. You just directed a feature film called Access, which is going to be released this year, right?
It's going to be it literally is having its world premiere the first week of April at the Sarasota Film Festival.
So what planning software do you use?
brain, which is clearly malfunctioning right now. I need to update brain because brain software not working. You know, I don't have, it's funny, I am kind of obsessed with effectiveness, but I don't use any high-tech software to organize my day. But I will say that I do, you know, I think my life is kind of 90% joyful play and in an area that I'm wildly challenged and engaged by. I love what I do. And then 10% crippling workaholism. And I it always comes across as a joke, but I'm serious. Like, I'm only happy, and I've said this before, when I have the penny taste of panic in my mouth. That's when I know that I'm alive, is when I think I might not live through today. So, you know, people jump out of planes. I just overcommit.
You just overworked yourself. And you're kind of famously exactly. a passionate home brewer. Do you get much time to do that?
I don't get to do anything of leisure whatsoever in my life at all. All of my hobbies have fallen by the wayside. I did homebrew quite a bit when I was younger, and it just I just ran out of road in terms of, you know, hobbies. For the last 4 years, I've been able to do some collaborative brews with Stone Brewing in San Diego, which has been really fun because, you know, I get to go to, you know, it's nothing more fun for a home brewer than to go to a real brewery with these giant, you know, mash tuns and get to make beer with professionals. And then leave and have them take care of everything else. So every year I do a collaborative brew with them, and that's always a lot of fun. And we do a big charity event called HopCon that happens right around Comic-Con. And so I get to kind of dovetail two of my passions, which is, you know, beer nerdery and
just
all other
nerderies.
Just regular, you know, run-of-the-mill street nerdery.
I mean, you mentioned Comic-Con, so I wanted to ask about your reaction, I mean, which at this point has to be getting old, when your credentials as a nerd are questioned. The entry into nerdism and geekism seems to, for some people, be limited.
And reserved for men and reserved and precluded for people of color? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that get old when you go to these cons?
Yeah, I mean, it's tiresome. I don't get outraged by it. You know, I think that when you are an excluded group, you can develop this kind of, I don't know what the actual term for it is, but when a group is hazed and then they return and haze as viciously or even more viciously the group that follows. But I think you have a group of people that's been excluded for most of their lives, and they finally have something that they feel is theirs, and they don't see that they're employing the same kind of exclusive strategies that were used against them when they were growing up. They're not even always aware of it. But it doesn't affect me personally because it is who I am. It's not a choice that I made. And I had Seth Green on my podcast several years ago, Girl on Guy, and we were talking about kind of taking on the mantle of nerdery. And he said, you can't call yourself a nerd if you didn't spend a significant amount of your childhood playing alone. And so by that litmus test, you know, I should be reserving a cape of some kind or, a crown. Because, I mean, a big part of my childhood was playing in my backyard alone, playing on my playground alone, reading on the bus for hours until I missed my stop and had to be collected from the turnaround lot. I was a very isolated kid socially, and I was a big reader, and I had glasses, and I was the only black kid in my school. I mean, at the time, that, you know, that felt like a pariah state. You know, I was lonely, but it was everything that made me who I am today. So when people challenge it, it doesn't matter to me because it's like telling me that, you know, I don't know that you know, you're not nearsighted. Well, I am nearsighted and I wear contact lenses. And no matter how many times you say it, it's not going to undo the fact that I can't see a thing when I get out of bed in the morning, you know. So those challenges, they're meaningless.
So I have to ask you this about Wikipedia, which I always scan before I do an interview. And the reason I scan it is because you often find weird stuff in there, and I don't know how it arrived. So I have to ask you this, because Wikipedia makes it sound like you would never have gone into acting were it not for your crush on Sam Rockwell. Because they say you followed him into an improv class and basically never left.
That is true. That is absolutely true. And who knows if I would have gotten into acting or not. My mother says I was always this kind of presentational ham. I think I was a subtle and thoughtful, tiny intellectual. But, you know, we can dispute that on an ongoing basis. That is a true story. And when I interview people on my podcast and I ask them how they got into acting, I will tell you that 95% of them say it's because of a girl or a boy. I mean, it's always, I have a line. I say it, it's always a girl. It's always a girl. Guys are like, there was this cute girl in acting class and I followed her in there, and the girl and I never dated, but you know, acting and I fell in love. And it is very true that I went to school with Sam Rockwell. I had a big crush on him. I followed him into an improv class and I fell in love with the improv class. And I might have found my way there anyway, but that is not apocrypha in any way. And in fact, Sam and I are still very, very close friends to this day, and he makes a little cameo in my first film. So,
did you ever date him?
Yes, we did. We dated. Oh, yeah. Oh, look at me. Of course we dated.
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking.
For no reason other than curiosity, we dated.
We'll see. There you go. You got to get it out of the way. You got to rule it out. If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with actress Aisha Tyler. She voices Lana Kane on the animated show Archer, which is made right here in Atlanta. So this is probably going to be another weird question I have to ask you, because there's one thing that Lana's really well known for on the show, and it's these long rants. Here's an example.
So
what? Anxious about a half-drunk first time driving a submarine idiot taking me to the bottom of the ocean to face 40 eco-terrorists led by a crazy person who's about to bomb the entire East Coast with nerve gas?
I was gonna say...
What? What were you gonna say?
So, does it hurt your voice? Do you have to do stuff to protect your voice?
I love how practical of a question that is. It does hurt my voice. And in fact, sometimes we'll save those rants or the screams for the end of the show, because I don't have a delicate voice, but it just is under an additional amount of pressure than most people experience. You know, I work on a talk show where I'm required to talk for a living, and then I do Archer, which requires a lot of talking, and then when I'm doing my podcast, that's 90 minutes typically of conversation. So it just is strained more than most voices, and I have come out of Archer sessions virtually hoarse, like having coming out with kind of laryngitis, no voice at all. So we try to kind of be strategic about how we do those scenes. And I think if you listen back to some episodes of Archer, I can't tell you which ones because I clearly have a terrible memory. There are some where I am barely able to speak and I'm kind of forcing it out, which is fine. I mean, you know, I'm a vocal athlete. I can get through it. But she's a demanding lady, Lana Kane.
So what is the difference? What's the difference in the job itself between doing the voices? And you've also done voiceovers for video games like Halo.
Mm-hmm.
What is the difference in the acting itself between that, where you have only your voice, and just doing a regular scripted show?
That's a good question. I find kind of the work I do to be kind of performance decathlon. You know what I mean? Like every aspect of being an actor, in the same way that every aspect of being an athlete, they're complementary. So I don't think about them as being really different, but just kind of different facets of the same job. But it is much more, in some ways, technical when you're just using your voice, because you've got to create a feeling for the person who's listening that is more you know, you've got one tool to do multiple jobs, which is to give them a sense of character, a sense of place, experience. You're trying to interact with people who you're not actually speaking with. You know, I don't want to dismiss the other acting work I do because I think it's all challenging. But when you've got other people in the room and you've got props and you've got wardrobe on, you're able to kind of relax into the moment in a way because there are other things doing some of your job for you. But with your voice, you've got to accomplish a lot with just sound.
So, you know, you'll get into relationships and in like the third or fourth date, you'll start predicting whether that relationship will last.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you do the same thing with your acting projects. And if you do, if you thought Archer would make it to season 8.
Well, first of all, I go into every acting relationship thinking that it's doomed. And it's going to end with me standing in the street burning a pile of clothes with kerosene. You know, you go. Every actor goes into this job thinking this is all going to end terribly for me. Nothing's ever going to go. Nothing's ever going to work. I'm going to be fired during the dress rehearsal. With Archer, I didn't even think it was going to get ordered. So this has been 8 years of gravy, quite honestly, because I remember reading the script and thinking this is too smart, too funny, too dirty, too literate to ever, ever get on television. But I thought it's going to be a fun pilot to make. I'll make a tiny bit of money and I'll get to meet the guys behind C-Lab 2021, which was a show I was obsessed with in the kind of late 90s, early 2000s. I remember watching it when I was on Talk Soup and just wanting to tell everybody about this incredible, crazy show. So I just thought I was going to get to meet the C-Lab guys and you know, get a visit to Atlanta. And I was confident it was not going to get ordered. And so every single season when we've got picked up again, it's always a delight and a surprise. And I'm so proud of this show. I mean, it's definitely, it's something that I think every time we are making it, I'm just delighted that I'm a part of it. And I know it's unique. I think a lot of shows aren't as specific and as incomparable as this show. There's not really anything else out there like it. And so I'm just thrilled to have been a part of it in any way.
Well, you know, they throw a pizza party always on the season premiere. If you did want to come to Atlanta, you would get free pizza.
Well, far be it for me to buy a plane ticket in order to have a slice of Domino's. But you know, a girl can dream.
Aisha Tyler is actress and the voice of Lana Kane on the animated show Archer. The eighth season of Archer premieres on the FXX network tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Aisha, thank you so much.
Oh, this was such a joy. Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up, the huge leap from working with Muppets to voicing Dr. Krieger. First, a personal tour through the studios where Archer is made. This is On Second Thought. It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. We're celebrating the show Archer today. The series is made right here in Atlanta using a whole host of talented Georgians. The animation studio where the show is drawn, edited, and mixed is just about a mile away from our studio here at GPB. And last year, we paid a visit. And,
tell us your name.
Oh, I'm Matthew Branham. I'm the associate producer.
Hi.
Hi. So we're going to start in art direction.
Okay.
Two of my producers and Amber Nash tagged along. You'd think she'd visit the studio often since she lives in Atlanta, but
I've actually never had the tour, so I'm really excited. They don't let us voiceover actors in this part of the building.
Oh, well, you can't be trusted, clearly. I didn't realize until I looked it up that Dr. Krieger's real name is Algernon.
I know, isn't that funny? It's a weird name. And the crazy thing is people assume that the studio's in here and we come here to record, but
oh.
So we never see anybody unless we stop by for like some, because there's a taco truck or something.
We started our tour in a department that really demonstrates why Archer is so unique. The illustration style they use is hyper detailed. You can see the folds in Archer's jacket, every groove in the tread of his sports car's tires. And they achieve that, in part, with the help of photography.
You want it lower?
No, that's fine.
More
I was going to have you raise the knee arm.
Hi, I'm Courtney Hicks.
Hi, Courtney.
I'm doing some photo ref.
Who are you the photo ref for?
Right now it's Lana. Yep, I do all the ladies except for Pam, and yeah.
You're not the right size for Pam, quite.
No, I've got another illustrator for that.
Yeah, and you're taking the photos.
Yeah, I'm Thomas Boucher, and I take photos of her when she's posing, then she takes pictures of me when I do all the mail.
Yeah, he does all the mail ref. We're kind of moving quickly through this episode, so we're kind of ahead of things, but we get the docs here, and it has the character, and the board references. Yeah, what's them wearing?
Sometimes we have their actions listed out. On here, we just have the shots listed. We don't have their actions. So we're ourselves going through the boards, finding what shot they're in.
So right now, we were doing this gesture here where she's doing like a palms forward. So we just go through and do each of them for each character.
Now, have you guys done photo ref for other animated series?
Nope, this is the only one.
Because this is a realistic one as opposed to, you know.
Yeah, it's such sort of a lifelike style that it helps to have real people pose for it. It gives you the right proportions and anatomy.
So I assume you have on really high heels because you're Lana.
Yes, indeed. All the women tend to have very high heels.
Yes, they do. So, I mean, how long, let's say you're doing a day of photo refs, how long is that you standing there making gestures?
Wow. It can be a whole day. Sometimes it'll be a whole day of shooting lady
like
ref.
8-9 hours?
Mm-hmm. And we'll take a break for lunch.
The males usually have a lot more stuff.
It's true. So that can take a day and a half or so.
But we're both down here because if she's not posing, she's shooting, vice versa.
Yeah, so it's usually a couple days of just being down here shooting photos.
And do you ever get to have to do, I mean, what's the weirdest pose you've had to make?
Oh, that's hard. Probably when Lana gave birth for me. It was, yeah, it was a whole lot of me on the table in a million different angles, just like faking childbirth. So that got pretty interesting.
How many hours were you doing that?
That was days. There were days a lot of angles of Lana doing that.
Isn't it a two-parter segment?
Yeah. And, you know, if they changed angles partway through, we needed people on the ladder shooting down of it, up to it. I mean, it was easy for me. I was just laying there.
In that position
but,
for most of it.
Yeah.
But you had a sheet over your lower
extremities. I did. Usually we're pretty good about keeping things covered, but, you know.
Yeah.
You have to be ready to do some odd poses, so it was never really a problem.
They shoot more than people in the photo ref department. There are also items that make up the background of each scene in Archer. Furniture, glassware, weapons, every shape of liquor bottle known to man.
Yeah, we have a very impressive collection of all the alcohol bottles.
Someone had to drink all of that.
Yep. I don't think it was too much of a trial for them, but... Do you have your brilliantly constructed air horn?
Yeah, it's that
one. Megaphone? A lot of times if we don't have something, rather than going out and buying constantly, we try to create. And this is one that Thomas made very, yeah, isn't that great? It's like a perfect representation. So we took one of the guns that we have and we cut up a folder, or Thomas did, and he bent it and taped it to make the megaphone. And he even wrapped a paper inside to be the technical gizmo in the center.
Yeah, we try to get as close as we can with stuff because a lot of times, especially with like guns and things, we're using a specific weapon, yeah, type of gun in the episode. So we'll get something that's as close as it can be, and then a lot of times upstairs we'll have a 3D model that then we can superimpose over the photo to get it at the right angle.
And what's the weirdest prop you've had to either find or make?
That's right. Krieger had a gun that made people poop, a brown sound gun. And that was a really we had to make it out of a super soaker, I believe, with a few other things taped to it. We may have deconstructed it at this point, but it was pretty impressive. Yeah, it helps to be creative on many levels in this studio.
So where do those photos wind up after they're taken? Our next stop is upstairs at the art department. That's where we ran into our old friend, storyboard artist, Kevin Mellon.
Well, here's a face that we know. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. So what are you doing right now?
Right now we're storyboarding the second to last episode of this season.
Explain what a storyboard is.
Sure. Adam Reed writes the script, and then we get it and do rough drawings that kind of provide the visual blueprint for how the rest of the show will actually be animated. It lets them know what 3D items to build, how to paint, what backgrounds they need, what character poses to draw and animate, and stuff like that.
How much artistic license do you get at that point?
Quite a bit, because, I mean, the show does have some, like, you know, style dictations, but, like, it's mostly we start with a blank page of the words of the script, and then we just draw it all out. We take and we do, like, a rough sketch like that, where it's, like, a stick figure pass.
Yeah, a stick figure with circles for drapes.
Yeah, and then we'll do a secondary rough pass that then goes to directors, producers that we review internally. Justin Wagner, he's the other storyboard supervisor on the show.
What are the rules for movement?
That's a good question. It is because we're what's called a limited animation show.
Explain what limited animation is.
Sure. The stuff you're used to with like Disney and like hand-drawn animation, stuff like that, it's very like they're drawing a drawing for like every frame, 24 frames a second, 24 drawings. We're doing what's called puppets, where they draw one thing and then animate that one thing. But we have to keep in mind the limitation of those things. So if I draw an arm moving, I realize, oh, I'm not going to be able to have the arm coming at the screen. We don't do that. It's going to be more of this is a side shot of an arm or something more limited, something where it's
also,
not a...
Yeah, Archer is a very talking heads kind of show. Comedy is through the dialogue. But then we'll get a script that will have a 5-page car chase sequence in it that... requires
chasing
us
chasing each other in the snow.
Right, yeah. That requires us to break the mold of people standing around and being at limited animation. We actually have to in depth, and that's something we do in storyboards, make it a no-brainer of what action is going to be happening. Yeah. And sort of we're doing the beats of a fight or stuff like that, and also figuring out what we can actually make look good.
Yeah. So it's a lot of, like, as we've gotten better at making the show, we're able to do more things. So if you look at season one, fight scenes, car chases, you know, like, it was a big deal when they did the Monaco chase in, I think that was season two? Was that season?
Yeah. The car race.
Right, yes. But that was all, like, Photoshop-painted cars, whereas now we have a whole 3D department that's animating 3D cars. So it's like our car chases are much, you know, we've taken even greater steps, you know, with that stuff.
Before we finish up today, let's spend a little time with the actor who plays a mad scientist.
What you doing, Krieger?
Well, I feel bad for Archer, so I'm making him some Portuguese flashcards.
Portuguese? But isn't... I thought Krieger was a German name.
Uber German. It means warrior.
How come you know Portuguese?
Because I grew up in Bristol County, Rhode Island.
Lucky Yates voices Krieger on the FX animated series Archer, but he started as a puppeteer. Lucky performed on a kid's show right here on the Georgia Public Broadcasting Network and at the Center for Puppetry Arts in Atlanta. Lucky appears on our break room from time to time, and we talked to him in 2015 about the opening of the new Jim Henson collection at the museum.
Hello, how's it going?
It's good. I mean, I feel like we're all set up to talk about Jim Henson's exhibit.
Yeah.
But can we go back a little bit?
We can go back as far as you want.
Excellent.
We can go all the way back. Let's talk about ginger products.
We're not going to talk about ginger products, but let's talk about how you actually became a puppeteer.
Okay,
because there's kind of two stories here. There's the story of your epiphany, and then there's the story of your big break. Right? Those are two separate things.
Well, yeah, they are. The epiphany just sort of it was just a wash. It was a clean wash through to the break. I got a job at the Center for Puppetry Arts in the box office.
Selling tickets.
Yeah, selling tickets. And my first duty, I've studied theater. I've always been an actor. And I've always been way over the top and just nuts, you know. Like, I was constantly being reined in college. Like, you have to act like a normal human being and not a cartoon character. So
that's slightly ironic.
Like, in Chekhov, you know what
right.
I mean? Like,
oh, right.
I was a silly old man and I was milking it for everything it could be milked for. So my first job was to go watch the show that they were currently running so that I could sell tickets to it in a knowledgeable way. And it was Space by John Ludwig. And I went and sat and was watching the show, and it was the corny, like, light from the heavens coming down with angelic voices. And I was like, you can do this for a career? This is exactly what I've been looking for. Puppetry is exactly what I've been looking for. Because I was always a big toy guy, and I had puppets growing up and all that stuff, but I never thought about it as a career choice. And then I started looking at individual performances while I'm watching this first show I've ever seen, you know, and I was like, I think I could probably do it better than that guy that's down there. I think his lip sync is kind of off, and why do I even know what that means? So it was very quick that I got an audition and then was put in a show there, and then, like, I did a show there, and then there were auditions for the show Salsa here at GPB, and then got on that, and then it just, you know, it's all spiraled out of control.
It takes a specific kind of performer, though, to really love having some other face express your emotions.
Yeah, you know what's really funny is you have to pour everything into your forearm and hand, like all of your performance and everything other than your voice. All performance has to be done through your arm, your forearm, while you're holding it above your head for a long periods of time.
Do you do forearm exercises?
You know, I should, but I don't, because I don't know. I maybe dig the pain. Puppetry is pain for anybody looking to get into this career. It never stops hurting, but
there's
maybe because
quote.
I don't do my exercises.
Yeah, you might want to do some
but
forearm
it is
yoga.
Pain. Now I think it always hurts no matter what. It's tough to hold your arm above your head for 45 minutes.
Well, I wonder if that puppetry also prepared you to be a voiceover artist, because that's another place in which you're not actually using your own body and face to...
Right, to express everything.
To express emotion.
Although with voice acting, it's great because when you're in the booth, you can actually move around and act.
Right.
You know what I mean? Whereas with puppetry, you're locked. Your body is usually locked in some sort of impossible, because you're crouched behind and below something, and you're sticking the puppet up where it needs to be, especially if you're doing on-camera stuff and there's a lot of people there, because, you know, your whole world is what is visible on a television screen. And so there's usually like four adult human beings all jammed in the same little spot, and you're fighting for your little place to stand and also get your character up in the air and on camera where it can be seen and act and do all that stuff. It's really, really, it can be intense at times, but there's nothing more fun than puppeteering.
So I'm really glad you're here, because I get to ask all the probably inappropriate questions about puppeteering that I've never been able
Great.
To ask before.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Lay them on. I am exactly the guy to ask inappropriate questions.
That's what I feel like. I feel like if you're an archer, you're probably open to being asked inappropriate questions. Okay. Yeah. So number one, is there kind of a code among puppeteers about hygiene? I mean, you guys are packed.
You know, I was just having this conversation in the green room. Well, and no, unfortunately, there's not. I bet when people are doing long runs of shows, there will be green room discussions of like, dude, you got to shower. But,
because you are in close quarters.
Yeah. And we had, back when we were doing salsa, which was the Georgia
Public. That's the Spanish language from GPB. Yeah.
We had one particular puppeteer that was would become extremely gassy after lunch. And he really did not care he didn't care that he was gassy, much
to the rest of our... That's an uncomfortable conversation to have with a coworker.
Yeah, and we would yell at him all the time, like, stop it. And he was like, what can I do? They should stop serving me all this lunch. And he was like, well, what are you going to do? Like, you got to eat, man. But just curb it. Like, get Beano. I think somebody started bringing in Beano.
So tell me about the relationship between puppeteering and Atlanta and why it is so close. Jim Henson himself with Kermit cut the ribbon.
Yeah. It's because of the Center for Puppetry Arts. Vince Anthony started, he was a puppeteer and thought, hey, there should be a place where, this art form is really celebrated and worked on and all that kind of stuff. And there was no other place in the country that was doing that kind of thing. As far as having, like, not only theaters, but also a museum and an education department.
Yeah, it feels almost as though the education department is sort of what sets it apart, because there are other cities in which they have healthy puppeteering companies.
Yes.
But there seems to be an emphasis here on really passing down the traditions from generation to generation.
Absolutely correct. I work at Dad's Garage Theater mostly, and we've been doing a
improv
puppet
company
show
here
there.
In Atlanta.
Yeah. We've been doing a puppet show there for kids since 2000, and it's kids are already puppet savvy when they get to us because of the center. And this, it has also churned out so many puppeteers, because people come in and they do a few shows and then they move on. And myself and another guy named Bo Brown do these things called puppet slams, which are a collection of short pieces for one night only and stuff like that. And you never hurt for getting people to fill your program for the evening, because the city is full of puppeteers because of the center. People that have worked with them and wanted to have a little voice and do a little 5-minute piece. It's really great.
Lucky Yates voices Krieger on the FX animated series Archer. And that's our show for today. But we want to hear about your favorite show, the show that you're looking forward to every season. Call us and tell us about it. It's 404-500-9457. Or you can tweet us. The show is at OST Talk, and I'm at Celeste Headley. For today, that's on Second Thought from GPB News. Have a great day.